This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello and welcome to the second in a two-part mini-series within the Charles Russell Speechlease Property Patter podcast. My name is Naomi Nettleton and I am a partner in the real estate team at Charles Russell Speechlease. As part of my practice, I assist landed estates and historic house owners with some of the more commercial aspects of their properties. Over the years, these have increasingly included the use of those historic houses and or other land and buildings as sets for filming. I am joined, as I was in the first episode of this mini-series, by Robert Parker, technical advisor at Historic Houses and himself a historic house owner, and also by Simon Foster, a director of tourism, leisure and events at Savills. In this second episode, we are also joined by Richard Davies, a partner from the commercial team at Charles Russell Speechlease. Richard specialises in IP rights and image rights and has helped a number of our historic house clients on filming agreements, particularly on these IP aspects. And we thought it was worth sharing our collective experiences with you as we have gathered them over the last few years, some of us for longer than others. So in our first episode, we talked a bit about how a historic house owner gets into filming, what's involved in the key terms, and also the importance of understanding what's going to happen when that filming team arrives on site so that you could be as well equipped as you possibly can and as up to date as you possibly can about what this is going to look like, but also so that you can have people on hand to help what is usually quite a fluid activity and what it might be quite hard to draft into a contract in absolute minute detail exactly what's going to happen on the day. So we're going to turn to a bit of the negative now, but also the positive of how we help clients to deal with that, because some of this can be easily dealt with. It's just being prepared. The message from episode one comes through again. What would be your top three things to avoid in having a production on your landed estate? For me, from a legal perspective, some of the key things to avoid would be, for example, having a discharge of liability X days after the end of filming, okay? And we've all talked about why that's a problem. And Robert, I know you and I have worked on that quite hard in the historic house agreement. And the idea of this sort of final inspection releasing the liability. So that would be one of the things that I would say to avoid in a filming contract. Richard, we've seen some other delightful things that we could talk about, caps on liability. This is all very legal. So I suppose it was sort of, if I did that in the contract, what would be in the production itself, some key things that you might, from your own experience, encourage people to avoid?
I think it's sort of related to what you're saying. I'm quite aware that a number of historic house members seem to be quite relaxed about when they receive payment. And it's absolutely essential to receive payment in advance, the whole lot as far as you can. Within a week of the production ending or leaving, you won't be able to get in contact with hardly anyone. And we'll talk about, damage and things like that afterwards. But when it comes to actually, it's important to understand there's a venue fee and then there are fees for other things. We talked in the last episode about your own estate manager being on hand all the time. That is chargeable. Are they going to want snacks or are they going to bring their catering van in? If you can provide snacks, I'm sure they'll only be too delighted, or even full meals. Who's going to provide those and when? Are you going to provide some accommodation on site? Some houses have accommodation. Again, what do they require from that? What is the charge going to be per night? Because they come in very different budgets. Venue project is pretty fixed. And Simon has suggested anything between £500 to £10,000 a day. But there are other things remunerative to the estate than just the venue fee. One of the productions a few years ago, Ghost Story for Business, for Christmas, my son got about £180 a day just driving a quad bike around, moving props around the estate. That was dealt at the time, but it's important to understand the different elements of the fee and the budget.
That's really helpful. And Simon, I think Robert's made an excellent point about being quite firm on your payment terms and making sure that you're paid as early as you can be. With your commercial hat on and your knowledge of the commercial terms that tend to be agreed with production companies, are they keen on that? Would they accept that? Is that normal?
Yes, it is. And sometimes they will tell you not, but I think generally it is normal. And I would completely agree with Robert. I think it's very, very important to be paid in full beforehand. And most reputable production companies will do so.
And what are the usual commercial terms in the instance of cancellation? I mean, I dread to pull us all back to COVID days, but there are other reasons why a filming might be cancelled. What would be the usual commercial terms that might be negotiated around cancellation and payments that have been made or are due to be made?
I think in my experience, and I'm not sure what Robert would say, but I think the normal force majeure clauses would apply to a filming agreement in the same way that they would to a wedding or a corporate event or any other booking within a house. So if through no fault of theirs or no fault of the location owner, the production had to be cancelled, then generally speaking, money would be refunded, less any actual costs incurred.
And what about if they just pull the plug on the production? So it's not like a government law, it was just them saying that actually commercially the production's not viable anymore, we're going to pull the plug. Robert, does that make a difference to those terms? Would you still expect to get paid?
Again, I think this is a part of the contract and the production. If it's a big drama production and they're giving you more likely a little bit more notice than others, you've actually blocked out that week and you can't have any other commercial activity. And it doesn't really matter whether the house is commercially inclined or not. There is still that week is taken up of your time and the use of your house for that production. And if they decide it to postpone or even delay, that's still a chargeable event, as it would in any other commercial practice. So it's important to get this contract actually prepared and signed well in advance and not let it drift to the last minute when payment must be paid, as we've just spoken about. Nobody comes on site until payment's been made. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Robert's the gatekeeper. Brilliant. So let's take advantage of having Richard as our guest and let's fast forward a bit. So you've had your crew turn up and they've done their filming in your house. And they then have these images. Richard, what can that footage be used for? Are there limits that can be put on that? Do clients of ours have different positions on that? Or do production companies under their contracts, do they ask for different things on that? What's the usual?
Yeah, thanks, Naomi. And the answer is they certainly do. And these are all points which are up for discussion and up for negotiation. As Robert mentioned, on the payment terms and dictating when payments are made and who comes on site, these things are often in the template contract that may be provided by a production company, which will be very favourable to them. They will give them complete freedom to do whatever they want with them and the images they take while they're filming. Use them in any productions and use them in any way they want. That's the typical starting position that a production company will have. And there are very good reasons for that, that they are, of course, going to want to own the footage and retain the freedom to exploit the production in whichever media and whichever sources they want. But that does create some risks for the property and the owners. For example, you may be very happy with them filming and using the footage for a period drama. But if they then decided, actually, this production is going to be for something slightly more offensive or obscene or something which you didn't approve of, can they then use the time that they've booked with you to film something else and to use it in a different production? Equally, they could take some images of the property and you may find that they then become stock footage that whenever they need an exterior of an impressive property in other productions, that they can just use this footage as they wish. And the risk there is obviously they're not going to come back and pay you again to use that footage in a different production. So having control over what the footage can be used for is something which we would typically advise the owners of properties to be aware of and to negotiate. So limiting the production company to only using it for the production they're telling you that they're on site to film, and not other productions, is a very sensible precaution to take. And there are also, you know, some other things which come into the similar bucket. For example, if you have paintings, furniture, other items on in the property which may potentially be caught on film, who is responsible then for making sure there's clearances in those items? So, for example, a famous painting, or you may have, say, a Tracy Emin neon on the wall. If that then features prominently in an ad campaign, then there could well be issues with using something like that. And you will want to make sure that that's the responsibility of the production company to go and get the rights clearances to the extent they're needed. Essentially, you want to provide a place to film in, and then everything in respect of the production is then the responsibility of the company coming to film on site.
That's really interesting, because the other way we have come across that, and Robert, Simon, it would be welcome to have some interjections here, is where clients of some of the larger lands estates or larger historic houses have got artworks which actually belong to the nation and are still in situ in those houses, but actually may belong to the Tate or the V&A or whatever. And so in those examples, they could be in the background of filming, but actually they may not be owned by that house owner anymore. And I suppose it's just a practical point. A, Richard, you're right to point out the legals, but let's push it all onto the production company and tell them they've got to get all the clearances. But in their defence, if no one's told them that this lovely portrait that sits behind the fireplace isn't owned by the family, they might not know that. Robert, I don't know if you've ever come across that. Perhaps all your pictures are yours, so it's not an issue. But other historic house owners, I don't know if they sought advice on anything similar or know of houses where that's the case.
Forget that the filmmaker has a script and a focus. The film will focus on that script and those people. Everything else is pretty well incidental around you. It can change when we've talked earlier in the episodes about the difference between the drama, when that may happen, compared to a travelogue or something about the house.
Got it. So actually, yeah, in some instances of a drama, it wouldn't really matter what picture was behind it, can easily be manoeuvred.
A picture of Oliver Cromwell, perfectly respectable, and that's been removed and they brought another one in.
Better colour trousers or something similar.
They're quite aware of it. I'm not saying every single circumstance. And depending how professional the production company are, it's to be aware of those production companies that are, excuse my language, flaky. They're fairly amateurish. They're starting out. They're making a B movie. Those are the ones to be aware of. Students, as much as I like to help them, they can be a nightmare because they don't really know what they're dealing with within a house. And in any way, they probably haven't got any fee to actually offer the owner at the end of the day.
So, Richard, the other thing, and in episode one, Robert gave the example of Brides Have Revisited, which obviously gave Castle Howard a whole new life. How do historic house owners deal with the name of their property or even the name of their family that might be associated with the production? And how might they just manage that if they had concerns, or the latter, they may be looking to promote the name of their property, so it might be a positive thing. What have you come across, or what would be your tips on that?
Yeah, it does work both ways. So you may well want to exploit your association with the production. For example, use on your website that you were the filming location of X production, and it may be something really valuable to the estate to be able to promote that. That is something which you can again ask for in the filming agreement, is a right to do that. So to recognise your association with the production. But equally, you may not want to be associated with the production, or you may not want the name of the property to be used typically in a drama. You may want it to be sort of referred to as a fictional location as opposed to the actual property name. And you may not want certain people depicted. So the family involved may not want to be on film. Again, this depends completely on the type of production, whether you're talking about a drama or factual programmes. And those are things, again, that you would write into the contract around restrictions on being able to publicise on both sides. So I think it's something to be aware of as an issue, because it could be something which is commercially valuable to you. As you say, you're often promoting yourselves as the location that was used in an iconic production can be very valuable, but isn't always something which the companies are able or willing to grant.
Simon, with your commercial hat on, what's your feeling about some of these rights and ways that families can use this, or houses can use this or not, or protect themselves?
Well, I think, I agree with everything that Richard says, and I think it's something that needs very careful thought as to whether it's something that you want to be associated with. But if it is, and there are, I've seen several cases where, the owner has recognised the commercial benefit of being associated with that filming job, and have done canny things like negotiated the rights to display costumes from the production to their visitors the following season, and done fantastic exhibitions of the filming. So you need to think about those sort of commercial opportunities, and actually piggybacking a little bit on the back of the PR of the film once it's opened, and offering something perhaps to your day visitors if your house or your gardens are open to visitors. So think about those commercial opportunities beyond the filming.
I love the idea of the costumes, and I should think all of us have been around a historic house on one occasion and seen that sort of thing in situ, and it does bring it to life, particularly if it's a programme that you've watched and really enjoyed. Robert, was there anything you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, the one thing I is to aware of is not become the story. It hasn't happened lately, but the earlier reality shows about landowners, estate owners, there can be a danger if it's a documentary or a reality show that you become the story, and you don't actually then necessarily have full control over how it comes in production. A typical one would be, for example, pheasant shooting on your estate behind, the house behind. That's something you then start to become the story. Or if you're shown in a particular light, and I can think of some reality programmes in the past where I think the owner was ill-advised to take part and portray himself and the family in that way.
That is interesting. I think primarily our focus has really been on using the property as the location for a sort of third-party story, but you're right, you might inadvertently get included in that if you weren't altogether sure what was going on. So again, it's about being appraised and understanding what's going to happen when people turn up. So we've done our filming, we've got our images. Rich has done a great job in protecting how they can be used. Everyone's got all the consents they needed, and the filming exists. And that process is also run alongside the physical exit of the film crew from the property. So, Simon, what happens when they go? What happens at the end?
Well, they go pretty quickly because they're rushing off to the next location. So the speed with which they dismantle and get out is incredible. But a good production company will have a good reinstatement plan in place. A crew of people will stay behind. A location manager an assistant location manager will oversee that reinstatement. And if rooms have been emptied of furniture, or if they've been redecorated for the filming, then it's their job to put it all back. And as we alluded to earlier, there is an opportunity for a room perhaps that might need a bit of a redecorate to get those rooms refurbished, which can be really nice, can be a real benefit. So yeah, there's the reinstatement can be very quick if it's a documentary or something like that. It can just be an hour or two, but for a big drama, that can go on for some weeks afterwards, and you need to be prepared for that.
Robert, what's your experience of these crews clearing out of your own house, or stories you've had from the historic house members on the exit?
I think I would echo really Simon that if they say they're going to leave on Monday at 5 o'clock, they will. And literally at 5 o'clock, and I've had a wedding coming on the weekend, a wedding coming in one gate and the film company going out another gate. Nerve-wracking, but they've got other things on their mind, and certainly not the venue. So in dealing with a location manager who may be left, it's very important to go round with him in all aspects, both inside the house and any damage that's happened outside to grassland, or vehicles can go on with some lawns, or may need reinstatement. They may knocked into gateposts because they haven't measured them correctly, or bought a larger vehicle than you ever imagined. So all these things need to be signed off while you've got the location manager. And they tend to be very professional, very good, have almost the power to agree reasonable recompense to repair the damage.
Is it usual when you're commercially agreeing these contracts to reserve a deposit to deal with that sort of damage?
Some do, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think the film companies are reluctant to agree such bonds and who's to hold them and things like that. But it can be, that's a quite a reasonable request. How much? £500 doesn't go very far now. It may need to be £10,000. The more it is, the more difficult it is to insist upon it, then it really becomes who holds them. Richard, I think you may have an answer to that.
Yeah, I think that one of the answers can be to that concern is that you may have, Naomi alluded to, in the previous episode, to priceless artifacts and works of art and pieces of furniture in the property. So having even a £10,000 deposit may not go anywhere near the sort of damage which could be done by having this sort of equipment and vehicles on site. And one of the solutions to that is to make sure that the production company has adequate insurance in place, because typically the insurers will be the where you will look to if there is some really serious damage. And so that's, again, can be something which you can include in the contract. So that they have maintained insurance up to a significant level, but practically speaking, actually seeing sight of those policies, so having the evidence that you can see that policy has actually been taken out, can give you some comfort that if a sort of worst case scenario happens, that you do have some protection in that event.
Yeah, and I think we always recommend to our clients that their own insurer speaks to the production company's insurer so they can have a chat on insurance terms, because different historic houses and lands and estates will have very different types of insurance. Some of them are very commercial and used to operating businesses. Some of them, Simon, on our last podcast, we talked about large events that they have. So they're really used to using those estates for really large scale events. And others, we've had clients who literally it's their own home and they stay living in it when the production company comes to film. So the insurance that they will hold will be entirely different. So that's another thing just to bear in mind for everybody from a practical perspective, a commercial perspective, a legal perspective, is to make sure that you've got the right insurance in place. So I think that comes to a close, our second episode of our two-part podcast series on location filming. A huge thank you to my guests for this duet, Robert Parker from the Historic House Association, but also himself a historic house owner, Simon Foster, Director of Tourism, Leisure and Events at Savills, Richard Davies, my partner from our commercial team who specialises in IP rights, and I am Naomi Nesterton, Real Estate Partner at Charles Russell Speechleys.
This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.